From bureaus worldwide, this is FSN.
Yeah, thank you, Simon. What a day it's been today across the United Kingdom. 26 degrees in the northwest, temperatures touching 30 further south. I hope you've had a good weekend and you've had a good Monday. Welcome to your Richie Allen radio show. Dr. Vernon Coleman back with me today around about 5:30 for the second in a new series where he'll be joining us every week to give us the counter-narrative, or at least the alternative viewpoint to the COVID story. Can't wait to speak with him. In the meantime, let's get on with it, shall we?
It's the BBG, not the BBC. You're listening to the Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Salford in Greater Manchester.
It's the Richie Allen Show. Broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Yeah, so I told you about Vernon then. You can join in via Twitter. Lots to talk about with Vernon. Children, the impact of the lockdown on the mental well-being of youngsters is one of the things we will be getting into. And I know many of you have young children. Get in touch if there's something you'd like to contribute, if there's a question you'd like me to pose to Dr. Vernon Coleman. Lovely. And I understand many, many more people logging on to vernoncoleman.com to download, or at least to copy and paste, the paragraphs. He's written some paragraphs for leaflets. I always make a bags of saying this, don't I? Yeah, if you like some text for some leaflets, some very well-written, sharp text about COVID, about the cashless society, go to vernoncoleman.com. Yeah, so it's a busy old week on the programme. Lots of really good guests coming up this week. If I get time a bit later on, I'll let you know whom they are, who some of those guests are. And tomorrow is an interesting day for yours truly. Tomorrow, the 15th of September, will be the 6th birthday of the Richie Allen radio show. 6 years ago tomorrow, I did the first one. I was in Fallowfield at the time. I suppose I can tell you where I was now. No, I'll keep it a secret. I was in Fallowfield, and yeah, Monday, September 15th, 2014, that was it. So 6 years tomorrow. It's flown by. Maybe more on that later. Maybe not. Israel has become the first country in the world to impose a second national lockdown for 3 weeks. Benjamin Netanyahu acknowledged that it'll cost billions. The financial cost will be billions. The human cost, well, anybody's guess. The rule of six came in here today. You know that now. It's illegal. It's illegal, not a sick bird. It's illegal to have more than six people in your house at any one time, unless your family is larger than six. God be with the days of families with 10, 11, 12 children. Not anymore. Not these days. So will you be watching your neighbours, will you? Will you be dobbing them in if you think they've got more than six people in their houses? Michael Howard is a former Conservative Party leader. He was on Good Morning Britain this morning on that very subject of ratting out your neighbours. He was asked a question on that by Susanna Reid, I think her name is.
Lord Howard, are you comfortable about what many people would see as quite a severe intrusion into people's personal lives, calling the police on what's happening within your own four walls? Would you do it?
Well, look, of course I'm not comfortable about it. We'd all prefer it not to be necessary. But we do face this terrible threat, and it's a question of saving lives. And saving lives is the most important objective. And in order to save lives in the face of this completely unprecedented threat, the government has to do things which in normal times we would find quite unacceptable.
And would you call the police if you saw eight people arriving at your next door neighbour? Would you encourage people to do that?
Well, I'd first of all have a word with my next door neighbour and hope that I might be able to persuade them to behave in a more sensible way.
But if you couldn't persuade them and they carried on doing it, would you call the police? Would you be that citizen?
Well, I think I might, it would depend on the circumstances, but I might have to. I do think that it is very important that these restrictions are adhered to. We've got to try and prevent a second spike in this virus. We don't want to see a repeat of the large number of people who sadly lost their lives just a few weeks ago.
Right across the media this morning, men and women were coming on to say, yes, pick up the phone and call the police. Now, Lord Sumption, Jonathan Sumption, former Supreme Court Justice, say it right, former Supreme Court Justice, he was over on Talk Radio and he's not happy. I actually spoke with Jonathan Sumption this morning and invited him on the radio programme. And he expressed interest in doing that, but he's off on a cycling holiday today. Good for him. Bon voyage, I said to him. So I invited him on. He'll come on when he returns from his holiday. Because he's not happy, of course, about the... Well, he's looking at all of this from a legal point of view, and he's not impressed at all. Here he is speaking with Julia Hartley Brewer, Lord Sumption, this morning.
The rule of six is not such an outrageous interference with civil liberties as the total lockdown enforced between March and June was. But it is objectionable because it's pointless, because it's arbitrary, and because it's unnecessary. It's pointless because without an army of snoopers and informers, it can't be enforced. And it's arbitrary because we're still being allowed to mix with much larger numbers of people in the workplace, in public transport, schools, the streets, shops and supermarkets. So that this seems to be a marginal measure at best, but it's intrusive enough to wreck a lot of people's basic interaction with other human beings. It's unnecessary because the recent surge in infections is being driven by younger people under 50. Who, with a handful of infections, are not going to suffer more than minor symptoms or possibly none at all, and have much less chance of dying of COVID-19 than they do of ordinary seasonal flu. And that's why, in spite of the upsurge of infections, the rate of hospitalizations and deaths has hardly moved in this country and has only very slightly moved in other countries.
So put that in your pipe and smoke it, Lord Sumption there. Arbitrary. Because you're being allowed to mix with much larger groups at work. He's right. And I wonder how he really feels. And when he comes on the programme, I'm going to ask him, what do you really think is going on? And then you heard today that the Labour leader of the Labour Party, Keir Starmer, is self-isolating because a member of his household showed possible symptoms. If you sneeze now or cough, of course, well, it must be COVID. And because Keir Starmer was on LBC this morning doing this weekly thing of answering questions, will the presenter have to self-isolate too? Jacob Rees-Mogg was left out of self-isolation. Terminological inexactitude, darling. He's back. It's all very confusing. And the vaccine? The vaccine? Well, for the love of Jesus, Mary, Holy Saint Joseph and the lambs. And not to forget the shepherds and the lobsters. In the nativity scene, the lobsters, for the love of all of them, the longer this goes on, even I might roll up my sleeve or present my arse for one of Billy's poison jabs. And it's upsetting people. I met a woman in the park this morning, said she's fed up, withdrawn, depressed, drinking a bit more. There was some story on Sky News this morning about alcoholism on the rise. It really is getting to people, this. And Pfizer CEO, a guy called Albert Bourla, told CBS News last night that by the end of October, they'll know if their vaccine works. And if it does, they'll be sticking it into people by Christmas. And here, they're trialling away, Oxford, AstraZeneca, GSK, rushing their products to market. They're like sword fishermen out in the Atlantic, hoping to get back into shore before everybody else so they can set the swordfish price. Bad analogy, I know. Swordfish, even if you're a vegan, you'll admit that swordfish won't give you narcolepsy. Or something like that, or ME. And speaking of radio and broadcast journalists, Andrew Castle was on LBC Radio yesterday morning. He presents a programme for them. Andrew Castle, eh? The worst tennis player in history. Couldn't return a serve to save his life. He was playing tennis professionally, this guy, when I was really into it. Back in the 1980s, I loved it. I loved Ivan Lendl, because nobody else liked him. I loved him. Lendl murdered Andrew Cassel at Wimbledon 1 year, beat him like a hated stepchild. 'Twas so bad the umpire was giving a point here and there to Cassel, it was horrendous. Cassel should have been put to sleep after the game for embarrassing the nation. He was so bad a tennis player, none of the women would practice with him because he couldn't get a ball over the net. And at a celebrity pro-am in Indian Wells, California, back in 1988, Andrew Cassel and Jeremy Bates lost to Stevie Wonder and Stephen Hawking in straight sets. Useless. Well, he's a journalist these days. And Cassel can't wait to have one of Billy's poison needles. Because at that point, life goes back to normal, he says here. You'll hear him in a minute. So here he is on his show, and he has a couple of experts on standby. This is the presenter, Andrew Cassel, who calls himself a journalist. Listen to this.
BC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Andrew Cassel.
Yeah, wind it up. Get on with it. Jesus wept. You'd imagine you were going to hear something important, wouldn't you?
Very good morning to you. 4 minutes past nine, Sunday morning here on LBC. Get the conversation going on this Oxford vaccine trial now. Do you trust what you are hearing? It's back on. I mean, I'm absolutely delighted about it. this is going to be a party
It's 1999 when we have the vaccine.
It'll be war-ending. It's going to be amazing if we ever, and it is the hope, very much the hope, that we're going to have a vaccine next year. But when we actually have the vaccine and a means of distribution, what a time of celebration. We can reopen our society, our worlds again.
We'll meet again, don't know where, don't know when. Mental, huh? Thrilled to bits to you. Did you hear the start of that again? You
did. BC, here. Global.
Very unprofessional.
Good morning to you, 4 minutes past nine, Sunday morning here on LBC. Get the conversation going on this Oxford vaccine trial now. Do you trust what you are hearing? It's back on. I mean, I'm absolutely delighted about it.
He's delighted. Right, okay. He carried on in that vein, by the way.
So it's back on, the Oxford vaccine trial, after a pause for an investigation after a volunteer reportedly suffered potentially dangerous side effects. The Medicines Health Regulatory Authority have said it is safe to continue. 18,000 people being trialled. And it's not unusual for someone amongst hundreds or thousands, and apparently this is large scale, many thousands, large scale. It's not unusual for someone to feel unwell. But we are told that the most serious adverse reactions after vaccination are coincidental and not related.
Coincidental and not related, eh?
To the vaccine. Well, who said that? Was the World Health Organization.
Oh, well, it must be true then.
They say that there is not necessarily a cause and effect present. There are 9 vaccine candidates in phase 3 trials for COVID-19 at the moment. And personally, I don't know where you stand on this, personally, I think what a time for celebration if we get a vaccine for this thing. You think about the changes to our world that vaccines have made. And you think about the damage that is done when people don't take vaccines, because this is often forgotten. And then you wonder where these, I think, social media-fueled myths and panics come from. What's it all about?
Right, that was an infomercial. Now, if I'd done that when I worked in commercial radio, I'd have received a severe warning and I would have been fired if I'd repeated that. Right? That's just garbage. Imperial College London Professor of Experimental Medicine, Peter Openshaw. We heard him yesterday. Peter Openshaw was sitting there listening and he was delighted with Andrew Cassel, the worst tennis player that ever lived turned worst radio presenter in Britain. He, the professor, well, he just couldn't have said it any better himself.
I don't think I could have put it any better, Andrew. I think you've really summed it up
You've nailed it.
Beautifully. I mean, vaccines are undoubtedly one of the greatest contributions, one of the greatest measures we have to promote health. And the most important thing is they stop us getting ill in the first place. It's not a matter of waiting for somebody to get sick and then, you know, applying measures to try and restore them to health, which is really what we do so well in the health service. But actually preventing illness is the most the highest aim, really, of health and research. So I think, you know, vaccines are stupendously successful. They're second only to water sanitation in terms of promoting global health. And I think it's so sad that people don't understand what we're trying to do or find ways of negating all of this benefit. I'm very sorry, really, to see that.
It's a real shame that people don't believe us, isn't it? He goes on.
The facts are absolutely barn door. There is no controversy. There are things which have gone wrong with vaccines, and that's why we have to conduct vaccine studies so carefully. And it's really reassuring to see that the Oxford AZ trial was halted in order to investigate this incident, because it means that things are working properly. And all the vaccine manufacturers signing up this pledge that they won't deviate from this proper course under political pressure is very, very heartwarming. I think it's so important that vaccines develop carefully and that we don't feed the anti-vax narrative.
We don't feed the anti-vax narrative. It's important they are developed carefully. Well, it normally takes 10 years, man. But you're pushing for governments to indemnify companies that you're in bed with at Imperial College in London. You're pushing for governments to indemnify them so that when people do start growing warts on their neck at best and dropping like flies with narcolepsy at worst, well, nobody pays for it. Crazy shit this, isn't it? Masquerading as news. Astonishing. He then had a professor from Nottingham on to a woman. She loves vaccines as well. No need to hear it. Then it was opened up to the public. First caller up was Jay.
What about you, Jay? Are you a believer in COVID-19 vaccine and its development? I certainly am.
I certainly am.
Oh, yes, definitely. I think we need developments of these vaccines completely, to protect us. They're using a chimpanzee virus in this one. It's called adeno. Did you know that?
Well, without going too much into the medical, because I was sort of aware as we were going to do this phone in that we could easily go down a road which I would have absolutely nothing about. Wouldn't be the first time, mind you. But yes, it is. I did read something about it being based on studies like the Oxford one, based on something that was already there, which is 99% of a chimpanzee's DNA or something is like ours. It was along those lines.
Yeah, so basically, it's a shame to hear about this woman being paralysed, though, isn't it, I think, on the trials.
It is a shame to hear about the woman being paralysed on the trials.
The trials.
Says Andrew Castle.
So I do have worries, you know, but...
I don't.
I don't.
As soon as that thing comes out. No, I've got no...
You don't feel that you'll be paralysed by this vaccine, then?
No. No, Jay, I definitely don't. I wouldn't pop that Russian one in my arm, though. Apparently that's absolutely perfect, according to Mr. Putin. We'll probably leave that one through to the keeper. 9:27, this is Andrew Castle on LBC, working from home.
9:27, let's just get rid of Jay and any talk of paralysis. Let's get rid of him fairly lively. That was Jay. I think he then turned to Malcolm in Manchester, who phoned in.
Malcolm is in Manchester. Hello, Malcolm.
Yeah, hi. I'm open to the vaccine, but my concern is open and transparent on behalf of the pharmaceutical industry. I'd like to see the results of this severe adverse reaction. And secondly, there's good reason why over the years the process of the five phases has existed, because of since thalidomide. And that was rushed through, and look at the outcome with that. We're still dealing with it. And I'd like to say that I'm very concerned that these phases, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, which normally take 5 years, phases 1, 2, and 3 have been done in a matter of a few days.
Although, as I just said, Malcolm, all protocols have been followed and they were preparing the ground for further phases, even though the earlier phases had not been completed yet. They prepared the ground to save time because of the urgency of the matter.
Yes, but there's a reason why the minimum period set by the authorities is a 5-year phased period of the five phases. That's why, because then in those 5 years, issues come up, and many drugs, and it's only 2 years ago that a major pharmaceutical company involved in the Oxford trials was discovered to have deleted and removed adverse reactions to an asthma drug. Remove them so they were not declared and available.
Malcolm, I'm not going to. I haven't got any facts in front of me with that whatsoever. What I would say is that I would quote the World Health Organization here. Most serious adverse reactions after vaccination are coincidental and not related to the vaccine. Cause and effect not present. Sir Patrick Vallance also backing that up yesterday. Finally and briefly, Philip in Weybridge.
So we just got rid of Malcolm. And this is why I think Vernon Coleman suggested it might have been Vernon, that these guys are tarred and feathered. This is as sinister as it gets. Listen to what Malcolm in Manchester said before he was interrupted by Andrew Castle.
A major pharmaceutical company involved in the Oxford trials was discovered to have deleted and removed adverse reactions to an asthma drug. Remove them so they were not declared and available.
Malcolm, I haven't got any facts in front of me with that whatsoever.
Yeah, it was Imperial College London. It was a doctor involved in trialling an asthma drug. It was killing some people and giving and injuring others, and the doctor deleted the data. It's only a few years ago. They got rid of Malcolm then. He interrupted him and he got rid of him. Imagine you're doing a show about trust in vaccines and you don't think to look up examples of bad faith by the pharmaceutical companies involved in developing vaccines. And a guy says one of the companies involved at the moment, because there's a number of companies involved in the Oxford trials, was caught red-handed deleting data from its trials that showed the drug was dangerous. Doctor ended up in prison. The lead guy involved, I'll get his name now in a minute. I saved all this information and it's just jumped off my screen. But it's true. And it's on live national radio. And the guy says, listen, yeah, I'm not against vaccines, but I wouldn't be as trusting as you are, Andrew, with your weak arse backhand. I wouldn't be as trusting as you are, knowing what we know about these companies historically. So he just got rid of them. This is the media. In 2020, and it's 25 minutes past the hour. Welcome to Monday's Richie Allen Radio Show. A lot more I could have gotten into in the news rundown, but maybe a bit later on. Dr. Vernon Coleman will be phoning in live from his home real soon, and we're going to talk. Obviously, we'll round up the day's COVID news. We'll talk a little bit about the rule of six. We'll talk about masks briefly. Got some interesting audio to hear. We'll get some commentary from Vernon Coleman on that. And then we are going to focus, spend some of the time talking about the mental health impact of what has been going on children. And that's hugely important. So Vernon Coleman joins the programme shortly. It is Monday's Richie Allen Radio Show. The programme is archived on Podomatic.com, Spotify, iTunes and plenty of other places. It's playing around the clock on the TuneIn app as well. And it's live, of course, Monday to Thursday at 5 o'clock and 11 o'clock on Sunday morning. And tomorrow will be the sixth year, or the end of the sixth year. Yes, yeah, 6 years tomorrow, this programme back in 2014. There's an interesting story about that. I might get into it tomorrow, I might not. We'll see how the time is. Right, Bruce Springsteen's new song then. I know I played it last week, but I love it. It's called Letter to You. And it's terrific. The Boss. Vernon Coleman joining me after this. Don't go anywhere. Terrific tune, and the album is out October 23rd, 28 and a half minutes past the hour. The Richie Allen Radio Show, broadcasting live from Salford, about a mile away from Media City in Salford. Huge interest in Dr. Vernon Coleman being on the programme since he began paying us a visit. It's going to be every Monday at 5:30, and he'll generally take on, I suppose, the big COVID pronouncements and give you an alternative learned opinion as opposed to what you're getting on BBC and on Sky. VernonColeman.com is the website. I mentioned the text. If you go to VernonColeman.com, enter the website on the left-hand side, click Health, and there you will see lots and lots of interesting links with articles and information, but also some text that you can swipe and use to copy and paste if you feel like distributing leaflets about these things to people. It's not a bad idea at all. Let's welcome back to the programme the one and only Dr. Vernon Coleman. And first things first, I better tell you this. I'm in a real radio studio with all the bells and whistles, like you would see in any commercial radio station in the world, but I can't work anything. So when I answer your call, Vernon, I should be able to talk to you off air. But I'm a Muppet. So I leave you hanging there for 2 minutes, so I apologise for that. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks, Richie. Very well, yourself?
I'm very well, thanks. Good to have you on. I know you've been looking into, since we talked last week, the impacts of coronavirus on youngsters, and we are going to spend a bit of time on that. Before we do, a couple of pronouncements by government ministers, short and sweet, I wouldn't mind, and doctors as well, I wouldn't mind getting your rebuttal on. Chand Nagpal is the chair of the British Medical Association, you know that. He was on Sky News this morning and he wanted to reiterate the importance of wearing masks, and I'd like to get your take on this. Here he is, Chand Nagpal, the chairman of the BMA, speaking on Sky News earlier.
How important is a face mask?
It's extremely important because what a face covering does, it prevents about 80% of the virus spreading from one person to the other. Now, if both the customer and the person serving them in a shop, for example, are both wearing a face covering, that transmission possibility between two people drops down to something like 5%. So it doesn't make sense to have one person wearing a covering and the other, a member of staff, being told they don't need to. I don't quite understand the logic. And that sort of adherence really would make a difference. And workplaces, which are also, of course, areas of risk, need to make sure that they have the right adaptations. They can be physical screens and barriers, because many weren't designed to have people working 2 metres apart. But again, the government has not stated that staff in such environments should be wearing a face covering whilst at work, especially if they can't separate 2 metres apart.
Do you think, Vernon, that wearing masks indoors is likely to become compulsory sometime soon? What do you think?
Yes, I do. And it's a total waste of time, because wearing masks doesn't make any difference. I have researched this extensively, and there are a lot of research papers into the value or no value of wearing masks, and they have actually concluded that there's no point in surgeons wearing them in operating theatres, and there's no point in dental surgeons wearing them either. There was only one piece of research I could find that actually argued that wearing masks was useful, and that was withdrawn because so many people complained that it was a piece of rubbish research. The World Health Organization changed its mind about masks. The World Health Organization, up until a few weeks ago, as you know, was saying, don't bother to wear masks, they're useless, because they had based their view on the evidence, heaven forbid. They then changed their mind for two reasons. One, because an organization called Masks for All said that everybody should wear masks. Now, this is an organization which doesn't do research, as far as I'm aware, but which appears to have grown out of the Global Economic Forum. And the other people who said that everybody should wear masks was a well-known medical research organization called Goldman Sachs. And they said everybody should wear masks as well. And that appears to me to be why the World Health Organization changed its mind. The scientific evidence. I've got in front of me here a review which actually says, and it was actually published before all this fiasco and panic started, and the heading of the paper is Why Face Masks Don't Work. And the basis is that it's got 36 scientific references on the end of it, and the basis of it is that the virus just goes straight through the mask. So wearing it is pretty useless. And if you wear it tight enough to actually stop any viruses going through, which they won't anyway, but if you can manage to stop a few bits of virus going through because you're wearing it really tightly, it'll impede your breathing. Don't forget, two children have already died because they were wearing masks. They don't mention that very much, which is strange. And the amount of problems which are caused, the hypoxia, lack of oxygen, is becoming quite a serious problem. I would not get on any sort of vehicle where the driver was wearing a mask. One driver in America crashed, and even the police said it was because he was wearing a mask, and he fainted because he became hypoxic. His oxygen levels fell too much. And the research which has been done has shown that wearing a mask impedes the amount of oxygen you get in. Now, they're going to make them compulsory in offices and at home soon. When they do it in offices, that means people who travel to work, say, an hour a day, will be wearing a mask for 10 hours a day. And if they've got to wear it at home, the number of people who are going to die because they're wearing masks is, before very long, going to become quite significant. And the idea that everybody wearing a mask is being doing wonderful things. I've read today in Java that they're going to make people who don't wear masks dig the graves for the people who've died of COVID-19.
No way.
The current of death rate means they'll be standing and holding on to their shovels most of the time because there won't be anything for them to do. Unless, of course, they fiddle it and say, as we do in this country, everyone who died of anything in the previous 28 days died of COVID. The nonsense that's... But I must say, that having sort of demolished face masks, and the research is there. I'm going to do a leaflet soon just listing the papers which prove that masks are useless. I did an attack on the BBC's view on face masks, in which I took them apart line by line for everything they'd said about face masks. I produced evidence that pointed out what a load of rubbish they were talking. To my enormous surprise, YouTube took that one down. I was much amused, by the way, by Mr. Castle.
I mean, isn't that astonishing that you've been a broadcaster, you've done it all, you know, the books, I could have mentioned the books, Brand New Tube is where you'll find an old man in a chair these days. I said I would have been severely warned. No, I'd have been fired.
I hope so.
Yeah.
That was awful. I'll just give you a couple of facts off the top of my head. First, I heard somebody on there say that side effects are either they just happen or they're not very significant or whatever. People feel a bit poorly or yeah. The needle hurt or whatever.
Coincidental, apparently. Coincidental. Sorry to interrupt you. Castle said that the World Health Organization told him that any of these problems, like the person with the spinal infection, coincidental. Coincidental,
right.
Apparently.
Well, then why does the American government pay out so many billions of dollars to people who've been injured? And indeed, the British government pays out for one vaccine that was made by GSK. The British government paid out
That's
60
right.
million. Presumably, they were just throwing the money around because they didn't need to. There are 30,000 adverse vaccine effects in America, of which up to 4,500 are serious. When we're talking serious, we're talking paralyzed or dead. I also heard somebody talking about, as you just mentioned, the World Health Organization. Let me just quote the World Health Organization. This is a direct quote about the new DNA vaccines, which will be the vaccines. These are the ones that genetically modify you forever and your children and their children and so on. This is the World Health Organization quote, open quote, many aspects of the immune response generated by DNA vaccines are not understood. However, this has not impeded significant progress towards the use of this type of vaccine in humans.
Imagine that.
So that's good. The World Health Organization admits that they don't know what the result's going to be, but you must have it. Go on.
We don't. Basically, we don't have a Scooby-Doo what this will do to you in the long term, but have it anyway.
No, and you also mentioned, or Castle mentioned, or did you, I can't remember, Valance, the chief scientific officer.
Yeah, Castle brought him up. He named him, yeah.
Yeah, now, Valance, of course, is quite enthusiastic about vaccines. And as you know, Richie, Valance used to be a director, executive,
GSK.
Whatever, at GSK, the manufacturer of a lot of vaccines and wonderful things. I'll just give you a couple of quick facts that everybody except Andrew Castle probably knew, but I'll give you them anyway. In 2014, while Valance was working there, GSK was fined $490 million by the Chinese after GSK was found guilty of bribery. In 2010, GSK paid out $1.14 billion because of the claims over one drug, and so it goes on and on. They admitted illegally promoted Paxil while Valance was working there for the treatment of depression and agreed to pay a fine of $3 billion. And that was the largest healthcare fraud settlement in US history. Fraud. F-R-A-U-D. That sort of fraud. You know, the sort of fraud that you and I would go to prison for.
Yeah.
GSK got fined $3 billion. And Valance, our chief scientific officer, was working there at the time. And everybody thinks that's fine and dandy. Well, I bloody well don't. And I also don't like the fact that our chief medical officer received, or at least the organization he was working for, got $40 million worth of Bill Gates's loot. Where does this end?
The revolving door.
When do people start looking? Why doesn't... I mean, how can somebody like Andrew Castle be on the wireless? How come he's not standing on a street corner just talking to people? He would reach too many people then. It's obscene that this sort of garbage is allowed to go out on the wireless.
Yeah, sorry to interrupt you. The ignorance would be forgivable. But I can't speak for Andrew Castle. It would be unfair of me to do so. But for most of them, it isn't ignorance. This is the thing. I think it was you who brought up tarring and feathering. The thing that really grates on me is that most of them know it's crap, not to put too fine a point on it, and are willing to do it anyway. And I don't know whether that's money or status or celebrity. I've no idea, but it's terrible.
Yeah. The media, of course, most of the media, the newspapers in particular, have been bought because the government keeps giving them money. The government keeps buying huge amount of advertising in the newspapers, and so the newspapers do what they're damn well told, which is appalling. How can journalists allow the sort of crap that goes out appear in their paper? How can they put their bylines on this sort of rubbish? Which, I mean, everybody expects the BBC and The Guardian to be a bit iffy, or a lot iffy, because they've got links with Bill Gates. But the papers, now, by the way, I was delighted that the Mail circulation seems to have taken rather a tumble. That really upset me for about one of a second.
Yeah.
But the papers are going to kill themselves. The TV stations are going to kill themselves. Most people don't trust the BBC anymore. The BBC will be defunded before very long, because as soon as we get back our democracy and freedom, people will start saying to MPs, and a new lot of MPs, because the 600 and odd, the ones we've got at the moment, will be all out of their ears, because none of them have stuck up for us. None of them have asked any serious questions about anything. They've just accepted it. And the lies about... the number of deaths and so on, they keep reducing. The British government worked so hard to make sure that we had lots of deaths so that we could look, so we'd all be terrified, that they overdid it. Now they have to keep changing the rules so that even homicides were being counted as COVID-19 deaths, and they still are, but not quite so many. Before, it was anybody, anytime who died of COVID-19. Now you have to die within 28 days to die of COVID-19. If you get run over by a bus now, when they actually write out your death certificate, you will have died of COVID-19.
I can't believe that's true, and it is true. This is the thing, I'm shaking my head here. You mentioned government ministers, you mentioned MPs. Listen to this, it's a 40-second soundbite from the policing minister, a guy called Kit Malthouse. And he was doing the rounds. He was on duty today. They take it in turns. And he was on duty today speaking about this notion that we better get used to a future world, not just around COVID now, but a world where we are tested all the time. And here he is. And we are coming to children after this. Don't panic. A lot of parents on Twitter want to hear Dr. Vernon Coleman, who's on with me today, talk about the impact of this on children and what they can do about it. We are coming to that today. But I want Vernon to hear this from Kit Malthouse speaking to Kay Burley this morning. It's very interesting. Getting used to being tested all the time.
I mean, the Prime Minister's talked about this sort of moonshot proposal of us all having regular testing anyway so that we can get back to normal. In any circumstance, we need to ramp up our testing capacity, and that's what we're doing.
So when do you think we'll get to 10 million?
10 million
That's the figure, the moonshot figure, isn't it? 10 million.
Well, I'm not close to that project, but I hope as soon as possible. I mean, it strikes me if we're not going to get a vaccine in the next couple of 3 months, getting the maximum amount of testing out there, so we all know where we stand, that we're all able to take this individual responsibility towards our collective health seriously and know evidentially whether we've got the thing or not, is absolutely key. So ramping up testing in any circumstance seems a sensible thing to do to me.
Isn't that a sinister soundbite, that an individual responsibility for our collective health? That is sinister in the extreme, isn't it?
It's terribly sinister. It's part of Agenda 21. I've been researching Agenda 21 for weeks, and it just terrifies. I have to stop every now and again because it terrifies me so much what's going on, and this is all part of it. And this, the testing, I mean, Tony Blair the other day was saying more testing, more little chips, more whatever. Anything Tony Blair supports has got to be bad by definition. And who was that guy who was talking just? He was a professor of medicine, was he? That one just?
No, of course not. No, worse again. No, that's policing minister Kit Malthouse, believe it or not. I know you were being sarcastic. It's staggering, isn't it?
Absolutely astonishing. What the hell? The tests are wrong most of the time. You can check it out. Even the BBC ran a story belatedly the other day saying that the tests produce more false positives than positives because we've all got bits of virus stuck around in our bodies, and when they do the test, the positive comes up. So what they're doing is they're testing areas where they want to close people down. So the farms and the food places, they're testing loads of people. Then they say, we've got to close you down because lots of people tested positive. Well, of course they tested positive. If you test more people, you'll get more positives. And now the government says, we've got all these terrible outbreaks. We're testing. Look at the death rate. It's the death rate. I keep saying this for months. It's the death rate that counts. The death rate is... What is it now? The last week in August, I think it was 70 for the week, 70. There are more suicides, most of which caused by this, by the lockdowns and stuff, than there were deaths from COVID. That's what we need to look at, not the test. Testing is utterly pointless. It's a waste of time because there are more false positives than real positives. So why do the test? You might as well just get everybody to sit at home and toss a coin every morning when they get out of bed. Toss a coin. Heads, you're positive. Tails, you're negative. There you are. I've done my test for the day. That was quick and easy. Save the government a fortune, and you get just as good a result. In fact, you probably get... I can't work it out off the top of my head, but you probably argue you could get a better result. Crazy. The whole thing is barking.
Just for a bit of balance. No, I've got, look, in the absence of these people, I mean, I've been around broadcasting long enough. It used to be that I would have somebody else on and you and he would have a good chat about it, and or she, and you would argue. Here's this guy, Peter Openshaw, Imperial College London, experimental medicine professor. Here he is, before we move to children, we are going to talk children after this. Here he is, just to provide the balance, talking about why vaccines are wonderful.
The facts are absolutely barn door. There is no controversy. No, there are things which have gone wrong with vaccines, and that's why we have to conduct vaccine studies so carefully. And it's really reassuring to see that the Oxford AZ trial was halted in order to investigate this incident, because it means that things are working properly. And all the vaccine manufacturers signing up this pledge that they won't deviate from this proper course under political pressure is very, very heartwarming. I think it's so important that vaccines are developed carefully and that we don't feed the anti-vax narrative.
Yeah, we don't feed the anti-vax narrative. I missed out a little bit of that. Before that, he basically said vaccines are wonderful, fantastic. He said the only thing that beats vaccines was sanitation, purifying water, or cleaning our water supply. Vaccines have done so much for our health. I can't believe we're still arguing with the anti-vaxxers, he said.
Yeah, well, oddly enough, these people won't debate with me. Isn't that strange? Yeah. And isn't it strange? Did you say he came from Imperial College?
Imperial College.
Was that the place that gets all the money from Bill Gates? It was so confusing.
It is.
And he says that vaccines have wonderful changed the world and all the rest of it. Most of the diseases which which fell by the way, and where people started dying less frequently, were doing that long before the vaccines were introduced. And there are a number of diseases where I'm afraid to say the vaccine kills more people than the disease. But we mustn't go into that, because that will upset all these people at Imperial College, Neil Ferguson and co., who are still around, still being interviewed in the mainstream media, still giving their quotes. And what about a little bit of balance in the media? There is no balance in the media. The balance exists between programs like yours on the internet and on independent, really independent radios, and the mainstream media, newspapers, radio and television, where there is no balance. That was why I laughed when you said balance, because they have no balance at all. And I know you're too good a reporter, broadcaster, not to want to have balance, but you know as well as I do that if you invite Matt Hancock to come on this programme and debate with me, you won't see him for dust.
No chance. I've said it to many of them. I've offered quite a few of them. I've got the emails to prove it. I've said, look, come on for an hour. I will just moderate. I will keep my own opinion out of it, and I will make sure you get equal time. And, you know, you'll get a 3 or 4 minute opening blast, and then we'll have a chat about it. But they don't come back. They're never going to come back to the likes of me anyway. Dr. Vernon Coleman is our guest. Vernon has publicly challenged on an old man in a chair, which these days can be found at brandnewtube.com. Brandnewtube.com. Look it up. You'll find it very easily. For links to it, go to vernoncoleman.com or go to my own Facebook page, the Richie Allen Show Facebook page. Last week, we never got around to talking about children. We're going to do it now, because Vernon has kindly looked into this and has got a lot to say on it. A number of people contacted me when they heard that you were going to come on and do this every Monday for the foreseeable future. And they said, I've got the emails to prove this, genuinely concerned, Richie. My child is going back to school. He's a bit nervous. He's worried about breaking the rules. My heart breaks when I hear him talking about breaking the rules, or asking me maybe we shouldn't go and see my older sister, his aunt, because she had pneumonia. And if I go around there, I might give her COVID. So there's a lot of talk about this. It's a big issue. I'll get out of your way now and you can jump into it. I don't know if you want to just summarise briefly before you get into it in more depth what this might be doing to the mental health of youngsters, even teenagers, in this country.
Well, I can summarise it quite quickly. The biggest cause of death in 5 to 19-year-olds now in the UK is suicide. That's what it's doing. The myth, of course, is that children are at risk. Just to start with a bit of an intro, as you said, the myth is that children are at risk. No healthy children have died of COVID-19 in the UK. Check it out. It's all everything, every fact that I give you, I have checked and double checked. You can, the Times, which is hardly what I would call balanced anymore, like any, all of them, but they reported 28th of August, no healthy children have died in the UK of COVID-19. To be honest, the whole mask thing, it would make as much sense as to say to children, you must all wear helmets when you go to school in case a meteor lands on you. And yet the amount of restrictions on children is phenomenal. It was said that COVID-19, there were more children falling ill with Kawasaki disease, but the facts show that there were less. The number of children dying of cot death and heaven knows what else, infant mortality and so on, has actually fallen. Now, whether that's because the people haven't been going to the doctor because the doctor's not really working properly, I don't know. There was never any reason to shut down schools. And in fact, countries which opened schools in May saw no increase in cases of infection, even though they keep telling us, and the teachers keep getting excited and panicky and heaven knows what. There was one paper that I could find that suggested that children were at risk and were at risk to other people. It was withdrawn because there were so many errors. I keep finding this papers that were basically promoting COVID-19, and that's not an unreasonable word, promoting it, were being constantly withdrawn. The the flu can kill children, but strangely enough, COVID doesn't seem to have killed children. There are four areas which I think have to be looked at. One is the psychology. One is masks, one is vaccines, and one is electromagnetic smog. Now, I know Barry Trower talks about this brilliantly, but I've been writing about this since the 80s and the 90s, and I actually wrote a book in which I discussed all these problems, the problems of microwaves and mobile phones. So I'm not actually treading new area. I'm just sort of joining Barry Trower, if you like, in saying that this is a huge problem. He attacked it from the electrical engineer point of view, and I attack it from the doctor point of view. If we start with the mask, which is the simplest thing to go through, there are schools which are now saying, oh goody goody, aren't we being wonderful? We are going to make the children wear masks. There was a primary school in Bletchley which said all the children will wear masks. In Milton Keynes, I saw there was a woman who is apparently an influencer. I'm not really quite sure what that is, but an authority on interior decorating. And she said that she equated mask wearing to tooth cleaning and hair washing, and said you have to get children to do these things. And she said she cheered when a primary school head teacher in Milton Keynes made face masks compulsory. Well, to me, that's about equivalent to cheering if a headmaster says, I'm going to beat all the children over the head with a cricket bat every morning because it'll teach them good manners. Even the government, even the British government says you don't have to wear a face mask if you're under 11. I don't know what other countries. Oh, that's England. It's probably different in Scotland. It's probably 10 and a half or 11 and a quarter. I don't know. But in England, anyway, it's 11. You don't have to wear a face mask. But there are primary school head teachers who apparently know better than everybody else that they should wear masks. Bollocks. Children do not need to wear masks at all. I repeat, no child, healthy child. There have been six deaths of children. They all had very serious underlying illnesses. The psychology of all this is absolutely terrifying. Absolutely terrifying. What's happening? The number of children who are being severely damaged by having to wear masks and by social distancing. And don't forget, some of these things are actually actually CIA torture techniques. Social distancing, isolation. These are CIA torture techniques, and we're introducing them for children, let alone for the rest of us. The number of suicides has gone up. The government isn't releasing figures on suicides, and I'm not surprised. But I did manage to find some National Child Mortality Database figures. 50% increase in suicides compared to 2019 among 14 to 21. The massive increase, and children are saying that it's because of isolation and tension at home, and their social development's being impeded. Nursery school children are being terribly badly affected. They frequently, if you watch small children in a playground, I don't go around watching small children in a playground, but you know what I mean. They will frequently touch and hug one another because that's part of growing up. It's part of social development. And because they're not allowed to do that, they're developing problems with anxiety, especially when they see the adults around them being frightened. Kids are afraid to go near granny because of that amazingly stupid government message, don't kill granny, even though, let me say, the government is deliberately killing granny anyway, because everybody over 65, if they go into hospital, 45 in Scotland, but anyone over 65 has a DNR notice put on the end of their bed automatically. Children will develop OCD, they'll become germophobics, a few of them will develop sociopathic traits. In Greece, there was a huge protest, I remember, the other day about parents complaining about children having to wear masks. Why are British parents... We'll go on to that in a minute, but the long-term psychological and physical effects are incredible. Lockdowns are increasing loneliness, and kids, as a as a result are going to be surfing the internet, playing computer games, and getting all the diseases you get with that. There'll be the cyber bullying. The kids are getting bored, depressed, lonely. There's no stability, and that's deliberate. That is deliberate. Let's not forget. I tell you what amazes me and appalls me about this. The Victorians did terrible things with children, and prior to the Victorian times, and they did it because they didn't understand, or because they were, it was just the way things had always been done. You know, at five you went down the mines, or you went to work in a factory, or if you were Dickens, you went to work in a blacking factory. For me, what we're doing now is just as bad as what was going on then. It's just frightening. There was a survey of there was a Childline has seen a 37% rise in children 11 and under contacting Childline with mental and emotional problems, because they're worried about dying, they're worried about their parents dying, they're worried about their education having been screwed up, they're worrying about what's going to happen when the second wave comes, which even children are now beginning to realize is almost inevitable. They're not sleeping, they're panicking, they're developing eating problems. A survey of 10,000 parents that was conducted by the University of Oxford, and they've done some decent stuff, showed that 30% of children are worried about catching it, 30% are worried about missing education, and 16% are afraid to leave home at all. More than half of parents are worried about their children because they're becoming withdrawn, they're scared of other people, they're scared of touching things, they are terrified when they see someone walking around without a mask, and the consequences are disturbed behavior, and teachers are reporting that children are showing less respect to them. I'm not surprised about that, to be honest, but there you go. The amount of suicide is the thing that absolutely terrifies me. And you look at the effect on parents as well. There was a big study of 5,412 adult Americans for the CDC, or reported by CDC in the States, and they reported, and this was in June, so it was a long time ago in terms of what's been happening, 41% reported that they'd had at least one adverse mental or behavioral health problem, and among those 18 to 24, 75%. Said that what was happening had affected their mental health in some way or another. More than 10% of adults surveyed in this big 5,000 survey, more than 10% had considered suicide in the previous month. This is what we're doing to children with the nonsenses that's going on at schools, with the masks, the social distancing. Masks, entirely unnecessary for children. Social distancing, entirely unnecessary. All these little tapes and the plastic screens, and you aren't allowed to play outside your little box, and you've got to be in a bubble, and we have to send somebody home if anybody coughs or sneezes. All unnecessary, in my view.
It's happened here. It's happened in Salford already, one of the primary schools. I have this on very good authority. One of the primary schools in Salford has basically shut again. I don't know if this is in the news now, but it's because a teacher was tested positive and some kids were sneezing. It's incredible. I came across a bit of audio yesterday morning, and I wanted to save it for you when we talked about this. And it's from June O'Sullivan, who's a CEO of Early Learning Foundation in London. So she's basically, she oversees a couple of dozen nurseries. And she was speaking to Sky News because nurseries are going to go out of business. Somewhere between 30 and 40% are going to disappear. And again, we could be here all day talking about the unemployment. And as a doctor, you know yourself, when things are bad financially, unemployment, doctors are never more necessary and they're never more in demand. Listen to what June O'Sullivan says, because she echoes what you said at the outset here about children needing to be touched and held and all of that. This is fascinating. Listen to this, Vernon. This is June O'Sullivan speaking to Sky News yesterday. She's an expert in working with the emotional needs of very young children. Listen up. This is very important.
There you go. a lot of our parents work in the NHS. So we started to think about how many nurses we could keep open. And so eventually we ended up with 15 open the whole time.
And how hard is it to safely distance in a nursery?
Well, we didn't socially distance in the nursery. We created our own bubbles before anyone came up with the idea of bubbles. Because children need comfort, and they're human. They need touch, and it's part of their learning. So there was no issue there. And I think once parents realised that there was going to be no issue there, they were far more relaxed. Can you imagine, you're a busy doctor in the NHS. You want to leave your child somewhere safe. You do not want to be going away worrying that your child isn't going to be picked up or cuddled or cared for. So no, we put all of that out of their minds. And interestingly, throughout lockdown, no child got sick and no staff member got sick.
Imagine that, Vernon. No child got sick, no staff member got sick. She wasn't talking about one nursery. She was talking about dozens.
Yeah. Well, I'm not surprised no child got sick with COVID because nobody has.
And no adult did. No member of staff did either, she said. She said, we never imposed social distancing. She said, we didn't do it from day one. We let the children touch one another and play with one another and hug one another. Nobody got sick, neither the kids nor the staff. Brilliant.
Splendid. But the schools, and the primary schools in particular, which are imposing all these rules, where are their heads? Where's their brain? Don't they ever learn anything? Don't they ever research anything? Don't they read anything? It's just astonishing. When I've gone through a few more of these disastrous things that are happening, I just want to go over a few things that I think people could do, parents could do, and that parents should get relatives and friends to get involved as well. But the third one of my four things is the vaccine, which they are going to be pushing very hard to children, the flu vaccine. They're going to be pushing the flu vaccine before they get round to the COVID vaccine. And with the flu vaccine, it's going to almost certainly with children, it's going to be a nasal vaccine, which is a live attenuated vaccine. What that means is that if somebody's banged each virus on the head with a big brick and the virus isn't as active as it used to be.
Yeah.
But the virus is, the problem is that a virus that's live and attenuated can wake up. It can sort of shake its head a bit and say, oh, golly, I feel a bit better now. I think I'll go and cause some trouble. The problems here are that the Center for Disease Control in America in 2016 pulled the nasal flu vaccine because they said it was only 3% effective, and it hadn't been effective for 3 years, and in fact they couldn't really measure the effectiveness because it was so crap. The second problem is that each puff of vaccine, each of these shots of vaccine, contains about 80 million live and genetically modified vaccines. Everything's genetically modified these days. Now, there are problems with that because nobody can guarantee that some of these viruses aren't going to go live. Not even Andrew Castle can guarantee that they can't go live. And you know, they've talked about the coronavirus can mutate.
Yeah, that's right. You've said that.
It can mutate. Well, the virus they're going to squirt up your kid's nose, that can mutate as well. And when we start looking at the side effects, the neurological and behavioural side effects, the problems that you get, remember, they're only 3% or less effective. When you look at the side effects, you think, isn't there supposed to be a thing in medicine where you balance the upside with the downside? In other words, you don't give a very, very dangerous medicine to someone who's got, I don't know, dandruff. But you do give a very, very dangerous medicine to somebody who's, you've just told us, got 3 weeks to live. That's risk benefit. Now the risk benefit here is that if you have one of these nasal vaccines, and I can't say for this year because I don't know what vaccine they're going to use and what it's going to contain, but it'll probably be one with lots of different types of virus in, because that's what they're working on, I think. But when you look at the ups and downs, the downs are that the child who has one of these vaccines might become paralyzed or die. The upside is that they've got a 3% chance of being less likely to get the flu. Now, that to me, that's pretty straightforward. To Andrew Castle, it would suggest strongly, let's give everybody two.
Let's have it, yeah.
And the other thing that you have to mention and think about with vaccines is the immune system, because, of course, vaccines have a tremendous effect, and kids' immune systems have all been buggered up because they're wearing masks, they're using sanitizers, and by the way, the FDA in America has now got a list of over 150 sanitizers which are too dangerous to use. And next time you go into a shop and they say you use our sanitizer, you should say, is your sanitizer, by the way, on the approved list from the FDA? And they won't know what you're talking about. The lockdowns have also damaged immune systems. Now, I know that I've seen papers and doctors saying, oh, masks won't affect the immune system. They're only for a short time. Ha ha. That was months ago. Now they're talking about wearing masks forever. And when we're talking about forever, that's quite a long time for anybody. And they're talking about keeping the masks on, keeping the social distancing. Immune systems will be absolutely massacred. And also, don't forget, most kids who've been kept in because they weren't allowed to go out during the lockdowns will probably have vitamin D deficient. The immune systems of most of these children are going to be very badly damaged. But when I've got, you can ask Andrew Castle, I'm sure he knows.
Andrew Castle. There was an astonishing piece in The Telegraph on Saturday by Georgina Hayes. And the headline was, now, this must be caveated by me acknowledging that I'm no doctor, I don't know anything about medicine. But the headline was, face masks could be giving people COVID-19 immunity, according to the New England Journal of Medicine. Did you see that on Saturday?
I mean, no, I missed.
Yeah.
But what she didn't say, presumably, was that face masks could be increasing the risk, not only of flu, but increasing the risks of getting COVID and of getting Legionnaire's disease, especially if you don't wash your mask. If you have a cloth mask, you have to either throw it away every day or wash it. And if you wash it, it'll be even less effective because 100% of the viruses will go straight through. And the problem with not washing it is because you could get Legionnaire's disease, because Legionnaire's disease rather likes nice, moist areas. And the reason that you could get an increase in COVID-19 is because you're breathing in and out all the time, the same air. You're not getting rid of your dirty air. You're not pulling in nice, clean, fresh air. You're getting regurgitated air. It's like being on an aeroplane all the time where the air's goes round and round.
Yeah.
Isn't it strange that you can only have six people in a house, but you can have 250 in an aeroplane?
Well, that's what it's what Jonathan Sumption said, or it's what he meant when he said arbitrary. It's ridiculous, isn't it?
It's absolutely mad. There's no logic to it at all. But what I can tell you is that the evidence suggests that if you're wearing masks, if you have a brain, don't wear a mask. Because the amount of damage that's going to be done if you wear a mask is tremendous. The amount of good that's going to be done if you wear a mask, well, non-existent, because the bugs are going to go straight through it. If you wear those surgical types, there's so much research done into this. I wish people had actually just do look at all the research papers. There's dozens and dozens of research papers that are good, and then there's the BBC. The fourth thing I wanted to talk about, because it's terribly important, especially now as kids are going back to school. Are we still all right for time, by the way?
As much time as you want. I mean, it's your favour that we're generously taking. So stick around till half six if you want. It's hugely important. I'm not going to cut this short. Of course not.
Okay. Well, the thing I want to talk next, the fourth thing, is as I said, it's Barry Trout territory. But since I've been involved in this for 30 years, I thought I'd earned the right to talk about it a bit. I just start off by giving you a quote from the chief executive at Sunderland City Council, who explains the latest 5G initiative to augment learning experiences for local pupils, teachers and parents.
Oh, yeah.
And he says, with all the excitement surrounding 5G in the UK, it's with great pride that I share Sunderland City Council's Smart City announcement that Hudson Road Primary School in Sunderland now has 5G ultra-fast Wi-Fi connectivity. Home to 283 to 11-year-olds, Hudson Road Primary School can now access proven download speeds of 995 somethings. I don't understand
meg,
that. Very
yeah,
fast.
Yeah. It's unbelievably fast. 995 meg.
That's right,
ridiculous.
Yeah.
Ridiculous. Yeah.
The important thing is it's a staggering increase, and this is still quoting this chief executive, of over 5 No, sorry, I tell a lie. 7,000%. Now, the interesting thing here is that this electromagnetic smog, which is produced by cell phones and microwaves and Wi-Fi in particular, is becoming a huge, huge problem. And I'll explain why I'm picking on this in particular in a moment, because Wi-Fi and cell phone data is transmitted by these pulsed microwave radiations, and they create a continuous electromagnetic field, EMF, which surrounds us all, and it's everywhere these days. But the frightening thing is, in schools, is that they put the Wi-Fi in the ceilings, they've increased the Wi-Fi power, and as that guy in Sunderland said, they've gone to 5G. Now, I'm not going to go into 5G. We can do that another time, but we're just talking any old ordinary G. My phone, by the way, is 2G. I'm quite proud of that.
That is old.
Yes, I think it is. It's 1990s or something.
Old technology, yeah.
Probably less harmful. The in America, in Charlton, they've done the same thing. They've boosted up their Wi-Fi signal so high that people in houses nearby can use it. And in other places around the world, they've done the same thing. Now, the evidence that all this EMF, electromagnetic stuff, this smog stuff, the evidence that it's dangerous is greater than the evidence about global warming by a factor of about a million, mainly because there is hardly any evidence at all about global warming, yeah. Even if there is any at all. But there are thousands of papers proving that there's a problem with electromagnetic smog. Now, France, for example, has banned Wi-Fi in nursery schools and restricted it for older children. And here's Andrew Castle's favourite World Health Organization, okay? They have confirmed that electromagnetic fields are carcinogenic, and they're worse for children because, strangely enough, children have developing bodies and they have thinner skulls. So the World Health Organization has confirmed that if your kid goes to school and they've got Wi-Fi or whatever, then your kid is more likely to become very seriously ill. Now, what sort of seriously ill are we talking about? Well, we're talking about being infertile in later life. We're talking about having headaches, irritation, not being able to concentrate, having behavioral problems, ending up with ADHD and requiring Ritalin, which I wouldn't use as drain cleaner. And I will almost guarantee it's gone on for a bit longer with the kids in school with all the behavioral problems and the Wi-Fi and whatever. Just about every child in Britain will be on Ritalin because they'll all be suffering from problems. What else can you get with electromagnetic smog? You can get depression, you can get suicide, you can get paranoia, you can get manic behavior, you can get anger, you can get blindness. Now, the Russians who've been looking at this, I trace the Russians back to the 40s when they were using various types of microwaves as weapons. They know more about this stuff than anybody. They are pretty hot about microwaves, big to vast quantities of it. And the Russians, surprise, surprise, in July, a month and a half ago, the Russian government recommended banning the use of Wi-Fi and cell phones. And when the Russian government suggests banning, I don't think the odd headmaster's going to say, oh, well, I'm not taking notice of Mr. Putin. I'm going to do what I want. So the Russian government said they've recommended banning the use of Wi-Fi and cell phones in elementary schools on advice from the Medical Department of Russian Academy of Science, the Russian National Committee on Non-Ionizing Radiation, and the Russian Health Ministry, because Wi-Fi, the Russian government said, causes DNA damage, endocrine changes, neuropsychiatric effects, development changes, and cancer. Now, that was the Russian government. You might say, well, what do we care what the Russian government says? Although the fact that they actually started all this stuff should mean something. The Austrian Medical Association has stated that electromagnetic fields and radiation accumulates. So you have one day's dose, and it adds on to the second day's dose, adds on to the third day's dose, and so on. And they say, the Austrian Medical, Austrian Medical Association say that children should categorically not use mobile phones. Mobile phones, of course, were never safety tested. They were always just assumed to be safe, which is bizarre. Here's another piece of evidence, UNICEF. Now, we're not getting far from the World Health Organization now. Yeah. UNICEF, in 2012, found that Wi-Fi in schools caused an 85% increase in central nervous system disorders, 36% increase in epilepsy, 11% increase in psychiatric problems, and an 82% increase in blood and immune disorders, which may explain why the incidence of things like leukemia in children is rocketing, and has done in recent years. In June 2011, the Council of Europe called for a ban. And going back a bit further, in 2008, Switzerland, France, Germany, Belgium, and one other dangerous, Wi-Fi has still been removed in all of the countries except the one that I was teasing about. The one that in 2008 started removing Wi-Fi was England, and insurance companies won't give cover to cell phone companies about the risks. The risks, the death rate, a child... The bone marrow of a child's head absorbs 10 times more radiation than that of an adult. And as I said, the Council of Europe has warned absolutely unequivocally that children are massively more at risk. And of course, the teachers might like to know that they're at risk too in schools, particularly where they have the Wi-Fi pouring out of the ceiling. Now, there's been a lot of argument, as you know very well, over recent years about whether certain types of vaccine cause autism or not. And the minute you say that, they shout anti-vaxxer at you and throw a banana.
Yeah.
Now, the fact is, there's also an argument that it's the electromagnetic fields which are causing autism. It's all up in the air, although I've seen evidence, actually very good evidence about vaccines. But let me just throw some figures at you, which I dug out, which are quite interesting. In 1950, one in every 25, these are figures for America, from the United States Center for Disease Control. In 1950, one in 25,000 children had autism. In 1970, it had gone up to one in 2,500. In 2000, it had gone up to one in 150. And in 2020, it had gone up to one in 36. So that is the risk factor now. Now, the people who say it couldn't be possibly be their fault will all say, oh, well, it's because we're getting better at diagnosing.
Yeah, that's the answer. We're getting better at finding it, is there an excuse? We're getting better at finding it.
Made a difference of one in 25,000 to one in 36? I don't think so. So what do parents do about all this? Well, the first thing I think they should do, and I really do beg with parents to do something, because you can't just let your kids be exposed to all this, the vaccines, the masks, the social distancing, all the other terrible things that are being done, because this is damaging your child. And don't forget that if children fall ill in the next month or two, they'll blame COVID-19. They'll say, oh, the kids have gone back to school, they shouldn't have gone back to school. And in the long term, well, I'm afraid it will cause infertility, because all this lot causes massive infertility, and already that's been proven. Nothing I've said is conjecture or me making it up. It's all provable. All you have to do is do a little bit of searching, and I'll put some facts on the website when I've got a minute to put them
together.
It's the reason
I'm not jumping down your throat and interrupting you. Although in the future we should have a debate on climate change. I'll tell you why. I feel a bit like you, but I can take the pro-climate change position, you can take the con, and we can do it properly. We can have a proper argument, even though I won't believe what I'm saying, but I'll do it properly anyway, like we used to do back in debate school. Can I ask you this? Do you think that the oft-mentioned, never-equaled future missus of mine might be onto something when she said that long COVID is a wonderful concept, she said, this idea that some people get debilitating fatigue and all these things you described, chronic illnesses, with long COVID. Well, she said, because she's listened to Barry Troer as well, She's read you. She's heard Christopher Busby on my radio shows going back years. She says maybe long COVID is a wonderful excuse for what 5G will actually be doing to the wider community.
Yes.
Wow, in a nutshell.
Yes, absolutely. And we have to ask ourselves how much of it is accidental and how much of it is deliberate. And I don't believe in accidental anymore. I don't believe in accidental since they started lying back in March. I haven't believed in accidental for months. This has been arranged. Nobody could be as stupid as Hancock, Johnson, and all the rest of them. It's just not possible to be that stupid. This is all deliberate. What's going on and why? Agenda 21. I'm working on that more and more. The whole thing, I think that what they're going to do is blame a second wave of COVID on we shouldn't have let kids go back to school. That's going to be one thing, and it'll be the Wi-Fi and the cell phones, because the teachers and schools are saying kids must come to school with a bottle of water and their cell phone. I mean, what sort of nonsense it is? Why do children need to take a cell phone to school? Is that because they're all standing in a little square in the playground so they can ring each other up because they can't talk to each other? The long-term problems are massive. And I think your good lady's absolutely right that the COVID-19, what was it? Was it created? Was it just an ordinary flu bug that was co-opted? This will be useful. We'll use that to have a big lockdown and take some power and start suppressing democracy, freedom, and all the nasty things which have been getting in the way for a long time. Parents, please do something. Write a letter to your local paper. Write a letter to the headmaster. Ask what they're doing. Ask if they're aware of the risks of the Wi-Fi. Ask why are they allowing Wi-Fi in schools? Teachers didn't always need to use computers. I can do my alphabet, and I taught. Yeah. I learned, believe it or not, I learned on one of them slates with a slate pencil.
You're not that old.
I am, honestly. I promise you. When I was little, I had a piece of slate and a slate pencil and a damp cloth. I swear to you, it's true. And that's how I learned to read and write. I didn't have a computer, but I can read and write, and probably better than most of the kids who've got computers. So why do we have to have Wi-Fi? Why do we have to have all that stuff in schools? Can't teachers just teach? Isn't that what they're supposed to do? Anyway, parents, get the help of teachers. Explain to the teachers that they too will be being cooked in classrooms where they're going to be absolutely covered in this electromagnetic smog, which will damage their health in a thousand different ways and cause all sorts of problems. Is it long-term planning? Are they wanting, don't forget, Bill Gates and his mates want population control, and don't forget that all these this electromagnetic stuff that causes infertility, that's going to cause population control in the medium and long term. Do they want to just kill all the kids off? That'll help with population control. I don't know anymore. Richie, there is nothing I would not believe. I will check everything out. And as someone who was trained as a scientist, I'd throw away anything which isn't convincing. But there is nothing now that I won't believe they're capable of.
That's amazing. That's amazing, because I've been contacted quite a bit in the last 3 or 4 months by people, some of whom had previously refused to come on the radio programme. Because of other guests that I might have interviewed or whatever, and would have said, oh, you talk about things that are a bit crazy. But I've had emails from people, and hopefully some of them will come on the programme, like yourself, men and women of science and academia, and they've said, this has shocked me to my core, what's happened, and the arbitrary nature of the rules and regulations, and the dawning realisation that something sinister is going on. Just before you come back on that, and we'll wrap it up then in 3 or 4 minutes' time, I want to acknowledge a couple of things. I had a lovely email. I won't mention the name because the person might not want to be named, but it's genuine. From a lovely gentleman whom was treated 40 years ago by Dr. Vernon Coleman. And who had lovely things to say about your manner, the time that you got to spend with your GP back then, you particularly, the care, the knowledge, the inquiring about the family, all of that. And that person heard you on this programme and because they don't spend much time online, didn't know too much about what you'd been doing And of course, you're famous for your books, of course, and your newspaper columns and everything. But that was a lovely email to read. And just before you come back in on that, a couple of comments have come in. Johnny would like you to put those links to those UNICEF papers on vernoncoleman.com. I'm sure you've done that, or you will do it anyway. So I just thought I'd mention that there, because my listeners are like, oh, that sounds interesting, that paper. I'd like to have it as ammunition to share with my friends as well. Number of people tweeted, John tweeted that his own child's head teacher has admitted to John that they find the rules and regulations being imposed by the local authority to be ridiculous and redundant. And it seems, in John's case anyway, that his child's head teacher and some of the teachers don't want to do this stuff, but they're in fear of their job, so they're doing it anyway. The social distancing and all this nonsense that you eviscerated earlier on today in this conversation. Huge interest in this today. Dr. Vernon Coleman, an old man in a chair, is now on Brand New Tube. And you can find it there, still on YouTube, Brand New Tube and vernoncoleman.com. But yeah, so many people of late getting in touch saying, I'd love to come on. And I did put out a call the other day. I said, look, if you are an academic or you are a doctor and you want to come on and vent, I'll obviously use the software, because I really do have, I've got a BBC radio studio here in my house. I can make you sound like a Dalek, or I can sound you, make you sound like an alien, and nobody will ever know whom you are, and I'll keep all that private as well. So you were obviously one of, I mean, you were there anyway, long before COVID, you were there anyway, looking at all of these things. But yeah, academics, doctors, nurses, in their droves, are now asking themselves, what the bloody hell is going on? And that's good.
It is, absolutely, it's good. And I just hope there's more and more of them. And teachers, like doctors, are saying, I don't speak out because I might lose my job or whatever. But you have to. There are times in life when you have to just take the... And I've done it twice in my life, so I'm not telling people to do something that I wouldn't do. I've walked away from jobs because I didn't think what I was being expected to do, whether it was the right thing to do. And the second thing is that I'm proud of my track record, despite the rubbish that you can read on the internet, much of which is garbage and deliberately done to demonize. I'm proud of my track record. I've never said anything I don't believe in. And as far as I'm aware, I haven't said anything that's been proved to be wrong, despite the garbage on Wikipedia that was changed the day after I first started doing this. The only other thing I want to say is that it might take a day or two. I'll put some references on, but my website's not entirely the most modern, although I did have it revamped about 20 years ago, so it is better than it used to be. And it's much more up to date than my mobile phone. But there you go. The it'll take a few days, but some of the papers that are significant, I'll get some of the references put on. But it might take a day or two, because we're working a bit behind the times. I mean, we haven't got any staff.
It's just you and your better half. I'm well aware of this. Do you know, it's a nice time for people to be reminded of that. And here, I mean, I never say a word about this or about myself, because I don't matter. It's a platform. But people need to know that there are one or two people in the independent media that are putting out content daily, and they've not got a team. You know, what Vernon is doing, ordinarily you would have several people doing it with you. But he doesn't. He has his lovely wife helping him out. But outside of that, he doesn't. It's the same as the radio show. There's no producer, there's no editor. And people need to be aware of that. Because people want everything today. Everything has got to be on demand. Oh, I want links, Vernon. I want them now. This is the way the world has gone. Well, yeah. Hang on a couple of days and you might get your links. But you can also go and look yourself, you lazy bastard. Look yourself. It's easy enough to find this stuff yourself. So despite the fact, just last question before we wrap it up for today, Vernon will be back, of course, at 5:30 next Monday, and as long as he wants to come on and have these conversations, I'm delighted to do it, because it's a nice feature and it's very valuable when there's nothing like it on Sky, BBC, Channel 4 News, ITV. So it's important that that we do it. So despite the fact that you were going down certain rabbit holes that others were reticent to go down, this has really knocked you, this, hasn't it, this COVID nonsense. I mean, you knew what was going on anyway, like we all did up to, when I say we all, the people listening to this show, up to a point. But this has really opened it up for you, hasn't it, this COVID thing?
It's startled me. I mean, I've been writing about drug companies, corruptions, food companies, phone companies for decades. And I'd got accustomed to the fact that they tell lies about you, they hide things, they deceive, they cheat, and do all that. But this is something else. This is not in the same category as all the stuff I've dealt with in the past. This is, to be honest with you, this is quite scary. This is, I mean, I've been threatened and had all the usual stuff, death threats and stuff stolen and writs shoved through the cat flap and God knows what else. Sorry, I shouldn't blaspheme. Heaven knows, no, that's blaspheming. With lots of stuff over the years, but this is just mind-boggling. And what I think has boggled my mind more than anything is the way the media has been bought and the way stuff like YouTube. I mean, what the devil? What's gone on? What's been the prize? I've lost count of them. I think they've taken down 20, 25 videos, and you can't find any reason for it.
No, there's nothing wrong with them. Yeah,
I did a piece about old people need to be looked after better and so on. They took that down. Well, why? Because, well, I suppose, because the official line is we've got to kill old people. I did a piece about forthcoming food problems, because there are going to be food shortages, inevitably, for a whole host of reasons that I've discussed before. And that's another item that we should talk about. But I've been through all that. And all I did was say, look, food problems, food shortages are coming. Bang, that was down.
Gone.
And so on and so forth. And you think, why are you doing this? Obviously, they've got teams of people. They're not just using an algorithm, because sometimes I've used my version of the official aids. Like, for one, instead of saying the word vaccine, I held up a piece of paper on which I said vaccine, and the poor viewers had to work out...
That's right, I remember. Yeah. Well, they do. They will assign people to cases like yourself. Look, not to blow smoke up your arse, you are a very distinguished physician with the added bonus that you have been and are incredibly well known because of the books and the newspaper columns. And then you can sit in front of a camera in a way that nobody has ever done before. No doctor has ever been as engaging, as dry humoured, as funny as you, and dropping nuggets of information on people. So it's the greatest compliment in the world on the one hand, but it's also the most frustrating thing in the world for you and for me. But of course they were going to go after that. And I'll tell you something else, Vernon. YouTube was a Trojan horse. So was Facebook. In my humble opinion, and what the bloody hell do I know, these things were given to people free at the very beginning, with no censorship at the very beginning, so that billions of us would sign up to the things. And then when we did, the trap snaps shut. And then they start to control what you see, what you don't see. They can delete channels, as they've done to people that we know, you and I. And they can go after videos like yours and delete them. It's a Trojan horse, unlike any I've ever seen before. Because everybody is there now. It's like a town centre with 4 billion people, 5 billion people there. Everybody gets their entertainment from YouTube. Everybody. So it looked brilliant. What a great idea. We can compete with the broadcasters. Yeah, right. That was a lie. We all went on there, and then it was easy for them to censor. But of course they don't like you. I'm going to repeat myself. They don't like you because of your distinguished history as an author, as a doctor, as a communicator. They were never going to allow those videos remain up. But the fact is, you're on brand new tube now, BitChute, other platforms as well. I'm sure, you know, whatever the numbers are now, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people are going to go there and watch those videos. So I wouldn't sweat that very much. But yeah, they were never going to not go after you, you know. You are you at the end of the day.
I'm absolutely sure you're right. It was a Trojan horse thing that they were just gulling people in.
Yeah.
And personally, I think people should boycott YouTube, go somewhere else, because almost everything that's on YouTube is somewhere else. Go somewhere else. Go somewhere that's respectful and respectable. And if those platforms stop being respectable and respectful, then go somewhere else. I was very straight with Brand YouTube when I and BitChute when I opened channels there. I said, "You look, you know, all you have to do is not
leave
take
me
anything,
alone." Yeah,
not to me. I promise faithfully, I will not do anything dishonest or dishonourable. But if you take anything, if you censor me, if you ban me, if you take something down, I'm off. Simple as that. And they understand that, and I think that's quite reasonable. And so there'll always be somewhere. Eve, as I once said, if I have to stand on street corners and hand out leaflets, there'll always be somewhere.
The leaflet's a brilliant idea, by the way. And I understand more and more people are logging on, taking the text, making their own leaflets with your text and distributing them. I know it's happening up here in Salford, I know that. A friend of mine is doing it. And look, let's leave it there for today. Brandnewtube.com, VernonColeman.com. We'll do it again with Vernon next week. There'll be plenty to talk about then as well. Just thanks for your time and thanks for continuing to do it. Lots of outpouring of love for what you're doing on Twitter today. If you go to Twitter.com, Richie Allen, you'll see the tweets coming to me. Huge engagement this evening and a lot of people saying thanks very much for doing it and for showing the humility that you show at the same time as well. So thank you, Vernon, today. And we'll talk again next week, if not before.
Absolutely. My pleasure, Richie.
Thanks, Vernon. The great Vernon Coleman, Dr. Vernon Coleman, live on the Richie Allen radio show. I didn't take on the climate change stuff, even though I agree with him. But I will. We'll do that in the future. We'll have a little debate. It'll be a bit of fun. We'll do the opening statements and all of that. A number of you who listen to this programme are convinced that climate change is real. So out of respect to you, we'll do that. The fires in California, the deaths, the Californian governor talking about so many people, talking about how incredibly intensively high the temperatures have been, the lightning strikes. So a lot of people who listen to this programme are invested in that. So I acknowledge that. I don't personally believe that CO2 made by man's activities on Earth is leading to catastrophic climate change. I've said that 1,000 times. But I can make a very good argument and let Vernon take it on. We'll do that in the near future as well. It's exactly 18 and a half minutes to the top of the hour. This is the Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Salford in Greater Manchester. What a day it's been. A very warm studio. 26 degrees it reached this afternoon. Why don't we take a tune? Let's have a tune. Here's Supertramp. And give a little bit on Monday's programme. Yeah. Supertramp on the Richie Allen Show, a Monday's programme. If you joined us late, you missed Dr. Vernon Coleman. You know the programme is archived lots of places, iTunes, the rest of it. So do check it out and do introduce people to it. I'll say this, I've never been one over the years for giving an awful lot about myself away. I've never been one for giving, personal information. I mentioned some years ago during an interview, I didn't mean to, about having a pretty difficult time of it growing up, which I did. I wasn't looking for any sympathy. It was important to say it at that time. And I'm talking physical violence now, not sexual abuse or anything like that. But I had a pretty rotten time of it. I'm sure no more of a rotten time than other people who went through that. But it did leave me with... It left me with some stuff to deal with in my 20s and my mid-20s and late 20s. And I did, you know, depression. I won't say depression because I don't believe I've ever been depressed. And I certainly have never taken any medication for anything like that. Counselling was obviously a very important thing, and I spoke about that briefly in the past as well. And the difficulty in finding a counsellor to really challenge you, you know, to get stuck into you and your baggage and your bullshit and, you know, drag it out of you and all of that. And I did that. I've often said to people, Good Will Hunting is one of the most important films that anybody who's ever being challenged by the fallout from Trauma. It's a great, great film, really. And the dynamic between Robin Williams and Matt Damon. For anybody who's ever met a counsellor who really challenged them and drew you out into a place where you could confront the fear and the, you know, the embarrassment and the pain of that particular trauma. It's a very good film. This is some preamble, you're thinking. Where's he going with it? I've not been great of late, to be honest. I asked Vernon about dealing with it and, you know, has it knocked you? It's knocked me, this. It really has. A few weeks back, I was convinced that by the end of the year, I was going to knock it on the head, the radio show, and go and do something else. Because I found myself, melancholy is one way of putting it, and just fed up is another way of putting it. But I found myself getting there in recent weeks. A kind of a hopelessness, really, looking at this situation and whether we're ever going to navigate this or negotiate a path out of it. Whether we'll ever really take it on or whether it's going to win this agenda. And for a while there, I became absolutely despondent because I was convinced that the agenda is going to endure and it's going to succeed. And I can't say, in all honesty, that I've left that place. I'm still in that place, really, where I'm not convinced that we're going to get out of it. And there's a number of reasons I'm not convinced we'll ever get out of it. And I think I've always believed this about the radio show, and that is that I've never been convinced that listening to the show has ever motivated anybody to do anything. And I've often wondered, and particularly in recent weeks, I've begun to wonder more and more and more, constantly wondering, are people listening to the guests like Vernon Coleman and like other guests, the many doctors we've had on, Marcus de Bruin, Kaufman, the academics we've had on, Judy Mikovits, Sherry Tenpenny, I could be here all day long. Is anybody taking that information and running with it and acting on it? Or are they not? And I've believed, I think, for some time now that people are not acting on it. Not enough people are taking any real action against it. And this is why we had this lovely chat, you and me, last week, and I read an email from my pal Joe in Chorlton. And Joe talked about the great feeling of community that she felt in London when 40-odd thousand people went to see Mohammed Adil and some of the doctors I mentioned. And there were others there as well, but I was chiefly interested in the doctors. The doctors. Because with all the best will in the world, the vast majority of people in this country, they will look at notable conspiracy theorists and they will dismiss them out of hand. But the doctors. And I had this thing about, yeah, it's all very well to go down there and see the doctors, but something else has got to happen. And this is this kind of quandary that we're in, independent content creators, this kind of catch-22 thing. We gather. I said to Jean Ann recently, it's like that scene in The Life of Brian when you have the People's Front of Judea or the Judean People's Front, I can't remember, and they're meeting in this place going on about how things are and up to a point they're right. Change is needed. We can't be slaves to the Romans, so on. But nothing ever happens. Even when he's being crucified, Brian, and they can actually do something about it, they don't. It's the point I was making about going to the meetings. Do, by all means, go and and show solidarity and tell the government that you can stick your rule of six up your arse. Yes, by all means, but then something else has got to happen, and it's got to happen locally. It really does, you know. And that's where I've been a bit down on myself in recent weeks. Yeah, I didn't plan any of this, so I'm kind of stuttering a bit here. And I know a lot of you are as well. I get the emails. I mean, the show, if Hayden Hughes was here today, he would acknowledge that the show itself gets dozens and dozens of emails a day. It gets hundreds, sometimes thousands a week. And when you're on your own, when you're on your lonesome, I can't answer those emails. I can't. I'd love to. But you see a few of them coming through from people saying that they're starting to feel really down about it and, you know, they don't know what to do about it. Yeah. I don't either, to be honest. But something has got to be done. Because going to a meeting in public and listening to doctors, good doctors, brave men and women, tell you something is wrong is really important. But you've got to do something with that information. You can't come home then satisfied in the knowledge that you did your bit. You didn't do your bit. You didn't do anything. You went and you saw a doctor, or sometimes you went and you saw your truther of choice who shouted slogans at you and you clapped and you stamped your feet. But then you went home. Back to your own house. In your own neighbourhood where most of the time you don't have any idea who's living next door to you, and you certainly don't have any idea who's living across the road either. So that's where I am. And it's gotten me down a bit, really, in recent weeks. I felt a bit kind of shite. And as a result of that, some bad habits have crept in, you know. For me, drinking more than I should drink. We're not at alcoholic levels, and I never would be, because I'm not addicted to it. But it's just easy to do. It's a horrifying reality, this. This is fucking horrifying. It's horrifying not to be going to a venue in Manchester to watch live music. It's horrifying. It's horrifying to witness this and to see such obeisance to it, such acquiescence to it by so many people. It's fucking horrifying. And I don't know what to do, really. There was a time, like I said, I'd said to myself, that's it now. Forget about it. I was going to go and drive an Uber. I made a joke about that, about doing the show inside a taxi. Picking people up on the street randomly and just giving them the fucking show, just talking to them about these things. So, yeah, and I'm not melancholy today. I'm in pretty good form today, as it happens. But, yeah, I think we need to discuss it, you know. I think we need to dig a bit deeper into it. And you won't like hearing this, but since this COVID bollocks, we've had a new graduating class of truthers, haven't we? We've had a whole raft of new fucking truthers. Useless fucking people who make a name for themselves and they get followed on Twitter very quickly. And they try and take ownership of the... I'm all over the place here now, but I don't care. They try and take ownership of the issue. Of any issue. For some of them, it's child abuse. That's what they do. They try and associate themselves with an issue. It's all bullshit and it never goes anywhere. And you've got to watch out for it, you know. There's a new class of truther that has been thrown up by COVID. And a lot of people fall for it and they subscribe to them and they follow them. And you send me emails saying, oh, you should get this person on, Richie. Why? It's just some woman shouting with a fucking megaphone. Why? Why would I want to interview that? What good is it going to do? The truther attaches itself or himself or herself to the issue, tries to make themselves synonymous with the issue, and creates a false narrative that there is no resolution to the issue without their own participation. It's misomania. I'm not naming names anymore. I did it in the past. I did it in the past. Over Melanie Shaw. I did it in the past over the Hampstead Heath hoax, the stupidest fucking hoax of all time. And the people who pushed that I'm not naming names anymore. You know who they are. Stop falling for them. Stop signing up to them and deifying them and following them on Twitter. Stop fucking doing it, because nothing ever happens. That's the whole point of it. You know who I'm talking about without telling you. You've seen them grow up in recent weeks. The truth are making themselves the story. I'm being attacked. Me for exposing this and that. You're not exposing fuck all. You fucking Muppet. You attention whore. You fame celebrity wannabe. You nobody. The information is all that matters. But you've got to act on it now. All of us. And I can point, by the way, to incidences where I've acted on it. Personally and in my own community. And you know this. It's no good. So go down to London next weekend and stick your fingers up at the establishment. Yes, by all fucking means. But don't come home then and open up a bottle of Bacardi. I've done my bit. No, you haven't. Because the only thing ultimately that will end this is civil disobedience on a massive scale. No amount of truth or industrial complex conferences is going to put a dent in this. No amount of deifying people and putting them on pedestals is going to put an end to this. You've got to put an end to it. And you've got to start disobeying. And you've got to encourage others to do it. And you've got to do it together in larger numbers than previously, maybe than has previously occurred. That's the way out of it. Right. That's it from me. I'm in good form, believe it or not. It's just been bugging me. And like I said, it's been getting me down. And I had a lot of emails today that I saw from people saying that it's getting them down and it's affecting them and their mood and their relationships. It's meant to do that. It's designed to do it. So you've got to start looking at what you can do. We all have, I think. James Perloff, who's not been on the show for a long time, years even, will be on with me tomorrow. There'll be other guests as well. You don't want to miss him. He's got a fantastic new book out, which he was kind enough to send me over the weekend. And I'm looking forward to getting him on tomorrow. Thanks again to Vernon Coleman. Thank you, Vernon. And we'll be back with Vernon again next Monday at 5:30. Going out today with... Do I even have a tune? I don't think I've even lined up a tune. Have I got a tune? I think I might have a tune. Going out with some Roy Orbison then today. This is his version of Blue Bayou. Until tomorrow, you take care. Bye now.